It is Monday, which means it's time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every Monday morning for the movie reviews. And we got a lot to talk about, so let's get to it. And here is Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And let's say hello to Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello.
All right, so we got the movie reviews here. We got to talk about lots of stuff here to talk about, so let's get right to it. Okay, let's see. Colin, why don't you tell us about American Animals?
Okay, well, this is one of two heist films we'll be talking about tonight. This is a true story about a plan to steal the most valuable book on Earth, and it happens to be located at the library where four college guys go to school. And one of them gets it in their head that the book can be stolen, and then they can split the profits on the selling of the book. Not the greatest plan or not the most well thought out one, but they are determined to do something great with their lives and not just, you know, graduate college and get a degree. The book is encased in this, you know, very thick glass, and they have to get past the librarian who guards it, and they have to get a key. And if you've seen the trailer, no doubt you've seen the shot of them with the fake stupid looking beards on. You know, do they pull it off? Should we want them to pull it off? So that's kind of the questions you're faced with when watching this film. I saw this a few months ago back when we were looking at films to program for the festival, and we did program this for the Chicago Critics Film Festival. I was kind of mixed on it. I find the movie to be, you know, relatively entertaining for the most part. Until about the third act, when we get into, you know, the post heist. I feel like the tension just kind of dragged out when we were supposed to be kind of on the edge of our seats about what was going to happen next. And instead, I think the movie just kind of plays out this this feeling of dread a little too long, to the point where I kind of stopped caring. And the movie moves at a fast pace, in the kind of style that we've seen quite a bit lately in movies like American Hustle and War Dogs and that kind of thing. That's sort of very, you know, fast paced, needle drops every couple scenes. This is made by a documentary filmmaker who made The Imposter, Bart Lighton. This is another interesting true story that, you know, would make, you know, that does make for an interesting film. But by the end, I wasn't sure what I was supposed to get out of it. I was just kind of, like I said, like the last act kind of dragged out for me. And by the time it was over, I was kind of like, well, yeah, it's a true story. So what? Like I said, I'm mixed on it. I do think it's an entertaining movie for the most part, but I'm not sure it succeeds at everything it's trying to achieve.
Okay. All right, Eric?
Yeah, I saw this at Sundance. I think I might have talked about it on your show back then a little bit, but I was a little less than mixed on it. I'm quite a fan of The Imposter, Bart Layton's previous film, and he tries to do something with this film because it is based on a true story, and he does kind of a pseudo-documentary mixture in this film by actually interviewing the real guys and interspersing that with the fictionalized version of what we're seeing on screen. And I couldn't help but, while watching the film, thinking that it was constantly taking the sort of the wrong approach to this, because these are basically a bunch of numbskulls, and I think giving any sort of gravitas to what they were trying to pull off, even not treating it with a sort of degree of satire or just flat out, comedy, it kind of, you know, it adds this sort of this undue, importance to the material that I think the movie doesn't even come close to really pulling off. Like you said, these are kind of numbskulls, and even though the heist itself is a well put together sequence and has kind of a mixture of both dread and the sort of the absurdity that I was talking about. Like Colin said, like, you know, the, everything that kind of surrounds it, it, you know, has a sort of this tension to it and this sort of this, this dramatic gravitas that I don't think the movie quite pulls off. You know, as the performances go, I think maybe actually the, my favorite performance of the movie is actually Blake Jenner, which is actually in those later scenes that Colin wasn't very too crazy about. And by the end of it, I was just kind of like, I don't think this is as important or as interesting as, you know, I would much rather have seen a full-on documentary with the real guys talking about, you know, how stupid this whole thing was rather than seeing it dramatized something that I don't think it really deserved.
I liked it more than you guys did. I thought it was very entertaining, and I thought the approach was really interesting. And I like you guys. I'm a huge fan of The Imposter. I think that is a great film. This isn't as good, but I thought the approach was interesting. And I liked the performances, and I thought it was pretty well made. And I was entertained throughout most of the movie. And I thought all the performances were pretty strong. And I agree with you. I think Blake Jenner's the best performance in the movie, and I've really really begun to really like that guy a lot. I think he's great and everything. So, I mean, I thought it was entertaining and pretty well made, and I enjoyed it. So I'm giving a yes to American Animals, which is out right now. All right, Eric, why don't you tell us about Hotel Artemis?
Okay, well, this movie kind of seemingly came out of nowhere, and the movie is set in the year 2028. It's basically sort of a water drought or water shortage that has caused society to lead to this big giant riot in Los Angeles. And in the middle of one of these riots, a group of bank robbers pull off another heist, three heist movies actually this week. And led by Sterling K. Brown and Brian Tyree Henry from Atlanta. And the heist kind of goes bad a little bit, successful, but also goes bad as Brian Tyree gets shot, and he plays brothers with Sterling K. And the best chance for survival is to go to the local Hotel Artemis, where criminals have a membership pass that allows them the opportunity to basically to healthcare. You know, they can't go to a doctor. We all know the cliches about criminals who can't go to actual doctors because they report them to the police. Well, here you have a safe haven where you can do that. And the hotel is led by Jodie Foster, who is the primary nurse in charge as well. Dave Bautista plays the head orderly in charge. And so the two of them go there, and there are other criminals staying at the hotel, including Sophia Boutello, plays an assassin, and Charlie Day, who plays a really kind of manic jerk, mobster-type character. And in the middle of all this, things get even further complicated when Sterling K. Brown realizes that his brother has actually stolen a pen full of rare jewels. And he knows that the people will want those back, and it leads to further complications as some of those people then descend upon the hotel, including the founder, the backer of the hotel, played by Jeff Goldblum, who has a complicated past with Jodie Foster's character, and then also a cop involved in the riot, played by Jenny Slate, that forces Foster to basically compromise her rules about who exactly gets let into this hotel. This hotel is nothing without its rules. So that's basically the setup.
Hang on. Yep. All right, Eric, hang on. We're going to take a break. And then when we come back, Eric will tell us what he thought of Hotel Artemis, and I will tell you what I thought of Hotel Artemis as well. And that's all coming up right after we take this break on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio back here on 720 WGN, and we're doing the Monday morning movie reviews. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's Monday morning and it's a jokey time. And we will also talk about some ice cream conversations. You know, we love to talk about food here on the show. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And also, you can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Okay, let's get back to the movie reviews. Before the news, Eric told us about Hotel Artemis, and now he's going to tell us what he thought of it. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right, what'd you think?
Well, I mean, you know, people who have, you know, before they saw the movie and even after they've seen the movie, have sort of compared the whole idea of the Hotel Artemis, you know, favorably or unfavorably, to one of the big mythos in the John Wick films. This idea of this hotel that's kind of a safe haven for the criminal underground and the crazy people that end up staying there. And they're not wrong about that, but what really surprised me about this movie is that it's less interested in the sort of the chaos that's going around. There's a lot of plot in this movie. There's a lot of characters going around. But this is a movie that's actually more interested in its characters. And that really kind of took me by surprise, that the best parts of this movie are when we get to really kind of know these characters. You know, it is all very much building to a kind of climax that we're hoping to get. I don't think it's the greatest climax in the world, but I think it's a very satisfying one. But this is a movie that I was really kind of shocked to see that this is a movie that lets its actors breathe. I mean, Jodie Foster, you know, it seemed like, Or we hope that she wasn't just taking a role because, you know, we don't see Jodie Foster as often as we should. And, you know, maybe this is just something that kind of interests her and she wanted to, you know, do it just to do it. But no, she acts the hell out of this movie. And so does everyone in the movie. I mean, I can't think of a weak performance in the film, even some of the over-the-top stuff by Charlie Day and Zachary Quinto. I like Sterling K. Brown is just an absolute presence, clearly, in anything he does. And even if his character isn't completely fleshed out, he does have a command of the screen. I like Sophia Boutella. Dave Bautista, again, showing that this guy is more than just, you know, the guy from Guardians of the Galaxy. This guy really has another great presence, and he can really act. But it always keeps coming back to Jodie Foster. And, you know, this is a movie about, you know, damaged characters and, you know, criminals, you know, unlike American Animals, criminals that you actually do kind of give a hoot about. It's, you know, it's a kind of a slight movie on top of it. You know, I think that, you know, there's a grander vision in here somewhere, but I think with its, clearly it's kind of its low budget roots in getting a cast like this together, I kind of walked out going like, yeah, that was kind of like just good enough, and primarily because of the actors in the film. So I'm recommending Hotel Artemis.
I liked it more than you did, Eric. I thought it was pretty great, man. And like you, I was surprised at how good the performances were, because I just thought it was going to be a slam-bang crazy action movie, you know? And it is. I mean, it's got great crazy action in it. But Jodie Foster is great in it. I mean, like, it's a really... I mean, she, not surprising, because it's Jodie Foster.
Yeah.
But, I mean, like, she's really, really terrific in this movie, and so is everybody. Everybody's really great. I think, you know, I think both Zachary Quinto and Charlie Day are having a blast in this movie. Mm-hmm. There's great action scenes. I really like the characters. I thought the ideas were really interesting. I like how, you know, this is the second week in a row where we've had a futuristic movie that kind of lets the futuristic stuff just seep in. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. all of the stuff, you know, like the technology that's in there, it's never explained. You know what I mean? It's just shown.
Yeah.
It's just shown, and I really like that. I mean, especially all the medical procedures that
yes.
get done. And there's also a fantastic sequence involving a 3D printer that just made me laugh for a long time. You know, and Goldblum is fantastic. I wish there were more of him. That was my only complaint, is that I wanted more Goldblum, because he has some really wonderful moments in it. I thought that, you know, there's a lengthy battle sequence, fight sequence in a hallway involving Sophia Boutella, which is phenomenal. And, you know, the big climax is really great. I cared about the characters. I really did. At the end of the movie, I felt, you know, sympathy for them, and especially Jodie Foster. And you're right about Bautista, man. He's terrific in this movie. And who would have thought that Dave Bautista would have a fantastic acting relationship with Jodie Foster?
Yeah, their scenes together are so... terrific.
They're great. And
yeah.
and I, who would have thought that? WWE
yeah.
superstar Dave Bautista and Jodie Foster. I mean, how does that happen?
I don't know.
Sterling K. Brown is great, as always. I mean, that's, you know, the guy, I think he's incapable of giving a bad performance. Everything, you know, I really am Jenny Slate and, you know, Brian Tyree Henry. You know, they play, Sterling K. Brown and Brian Tyree Henry, they play brothers in this movie. And I don't know if you know this in real life, Eric, but they've known each other for like 25 years.
Yeah, they're like best friends.
Yeah, they're best friends. Yeah. And you can feel that in the movie. Like, you can, like, their scenes together are also terrific. I think this is a movie that over succeeds. And I thought it was great. I thought it was entertaining, and I thought it was funny. I thought it was exciting. And overall, I mean, and most of all, I thought it was, like, really filled with characters, three-dimensional characters and terrific performances that I didn't expect. And I really love this movie. I thought it was really terrific. So
yeah, it was a real surprise for me too.
Absolutely. Hotel Artemis. Colin, you should see it, man.
I definitely want to.
Yeah, it's really good. Okay, Colin, why don't you tell us about Won't You Be My Neighbor? And I didn't get a chance to see it this weekend, and I'm not happy about that, but go ahead.
You should be unhappy.
I know.
Because this movie will make you happy. This is a documentary about Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, and the impact he had on public television and the role he played in kids' lives, starting in the late 60s and continuing through, 9/11, I guess. It goes over his life as an ordained minister and how he left the church to pursue television because he saw what an important tool it could be. And he wanted to elevate children's programming from, you know, stupid pandering comedy and change it into something more meaningful for children. And of course, he did that while talking about important issues such as war and divorce and assassinations and loneliness and, you know, things he felt strongly about that he could communicate to kids. And who else could do this other than someone with his demeanor and gentleness? And the movie covers a lot, including Mr. Rogers' parodies. And how he managed to maintain 143 pounds most of his adult life and how he tried to do a grown-up show that didn't really pan out. And it's directed by Morgan Neville, who did 20 Feet from Stardom. And he, he interviews, Fred Rogers' wife, his kids, his TV crew, his co-stars, and just kind of, the movie just kind of covers the cultural impact that the show had and just kind of what an anomaly he was as a person. And there's a lot, the question comes up a lot. It's like, was he really like this? Is there another side to him that we don't really know about? And by the end of the movie, you come away with it with a very satisfactory answer. At least I did. This is a movie that I think Fred Rogers got the life itself treatment that Roger Ebert got a few years ago. I think this movie is, just a really wonderful look at an individual who had a really great and profound impact on a lot of people. The movie also covers this sort of, another narrative that the other side, I think it was, Fox News tried to get going about, well, did he really create a, generation of entitled kids by telling them all that they're special and sort of, moving does a good job of, giving a rebuttal to that. So I think this is as good a documentary as we could have hoped to get on this person who, had a documentary coming for a long time, I think. And, I'm happy to report that this is a really terrific, solid documentary that I think, we kind of need right now because it's a movie about somebody who's nice. Who actually had an impact. So, I'm very much recommending.
I can't wait to see this. Cause I mean, like everybody, everybody's been touched by Fred Rogers. Well, I don't mean that. I mean,
careful.
Yeah, I know. But no, I mean, we've all been moved by him. And as a kid, he was just such a treasure to watch on TV. Eric, I know you saw this and you liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw it at Sundance. I'm almost positive we talked about it then. And, Colin took the words right out of my mouth. It's just that, if ever there was a documentary, a story, a reminder, of a film that we need right now, it's this one. It's, you know, I mean, at a time when so many of our heroes and people that we admire are revealed to be much less than we had, you know, we ever hoped for. Here's a guy that, you know, that walked the walk. You know, Fred Rogers was a guy that, you know, I mean, people, you may remember, you might, you know, have grown up and thought of back on the show as, you know, maybe a little bit of cheese here, maybe, you know, there's something that you liked as a kid, but, you know, as an adult, you know, it's not really, you know, might not really hold up in some manner. But, you know, this is a guy that was not only doing, you know, kind of a TV show for kids that would, you know, just to, you know, draw their attention away, you know, or to fill the time and whatnot. No, he was teaching valuable lessons and was doing so even through some of the worst periods of our country, doing specific shows about 9/11 and, you know, racism and things. And, you know, to see him do shows, you know, where he would sit down with children and, you know, tell them that things are going to be okay and teach these valuable lessons. I mean, those are the stuff in the movie that really kind of got to me, and really served as a reminder that, this was a very special person. And, you know, seeing him testify for, you know, for funds for, you know, PBS and public television and stuff. It really is exactly what we need right now in this culture of hate that we have going on, far too prevalent at the forefront. This is a documentary that everyone needs to see, and people who poo-poo it because of politics or some misplaced sense of hatred in their own hearts, really, you know, we have no place for that, because Fred Rogers was the real deal, and this documentary is a reminder of that.
That's awesome. Okay, you guys, hang on, okay? Mm-hmm. Eric Childress and Colin Suter, by the way, that is the movie that they were talking about was Won't You Be My Neighbor, documentary about Fred Rogers. Both Eric and Colin highly recommend it. Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we got more movie reviews here on 720 WGN. And welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate Showcase studio here on Michigan Avenue, and we're here until 5 a.m. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. We're going to talk about food, particularly ice cream, a little bit later on. And right now, we are in the middle of the movie reviews, the Monday morning movie reviews. Eric Childress, Colin Suter join me every Monday morning to talk about the movie reviews. Eric sticks around, and we'll talk about the box office as well. So let's welcome these guys back, get right back into it. Eric, welcome back.
Thank you.
And Colin, welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. Eric, why don't you tell us about Ocean's 8?
Okay. Well, this is a continuation of Steven Soderbergh's Ocean's trilogy with Clooney and Brad Pitt and Matt Damon, fantastic cast. But this one focuses on Debbie Ocean, not Danny Ocean. George Clooney's Danny Ocean has passed away as the film opens, and we meet Debbie Ocean in the same place we first met Clooney's Danny, at the parole board, as she commissions herself to be released, which she is, and immediately proceeds on a, you know, continuing the life of thievery that she very much knows. And she turns out for the past 5 years, she has been putting together a plan to rob a very pricey necklace worth over $15 million.
No, $150 million.
$150 million, yeah, I'm sorry. $15 million is the split. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, $150 million necklace that is going to be featured, at least, or assumed to be featured, around the neck of a celebrity at the New York's annual Met Gala on the first Monday in May. So she gets together with an old partner of hers, played by Kate Blanchett, and convinces her to be a part of it, and then this begins to put together a crew that includes Helena Bonham Carter, Rihanna, Awkwafina, Mindy Kaling, and Sarah Paulson. And they, you know, basically, you know, go through the motions, that, you know, exactly figuring out how they're going to, obtain this necklace that is going to be worn by a celebrity played by Anne Hathaway, kind of a spoiled, rich, almost like Kardashian-like celebrity, you know, vapid kind of character. And, you know, so they're going to pull this off at the Met Gala. Yeah, and, you know, there are a lot of twists and turns that go, so that's really kind of all you want to know about the plot. And, you know, this obviously this is, you know, whatever you want to call it, a reboot or an all-female recasting of the Ocean's films. And I was really looking forward to this. You know, I thought that, you know, that's a great idea. You have a pretty good cast. You know, I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, you kind of hope for a real all-star cast, but they went very diverse with what they have here. I'm not exactly sure Rihanna is that much of an actress, but whatever. She's a star. And I came away from this movie incredibly disappointed with what I saw. It seemed like this is a film that at some point just feels like it goes directly on autopilot. A lot of the material involving the heist feels very rote. The Soderbergh's Ocean's films seemingly got increasingly ridiculous in just how complex their heist scenarios were. And but, you know, heist movies can be ridiculous, you know, especially with all the twists and turns that revolve. So you do tend to put that aside. Then that being said, the heist in this movie actually seems to be the most plausible amongst all of them, and that's primarily because it is the least complex amongst all of them. It seems like there's very little to the actual planning of it, and there are things in the movie that just seem very inconsistent in how things are put together. Helena Bonham Carter's character, for example, is not a professional thief. She's actually a professional clothing designer that they rope in at the beginning of the movie to be the one who's going to design the dress for Anne Hathaway's character and gets her involved. So she starts out very kind of nervous and awkward and, you know, not, you know, being a part of this universe before. So, and then to see her go from that to, like, one scene later to being this confident person being part of this this heist plan didn't feel very plausible. It felt like Helena Bonham Carter going from one character then becoming Helena Bonham Carter in the next scene. It just didn't work for me. And I think that the longer the movie goes on, the characters actually become less interesting. I mean, Bullock and Blanchett, I love the way that those two characters are set up. And, you know, throughout the whole movie, they look like absolute royalty. I mean, they're just, I mean, those clothes are wearing them, you know, throughout the film. And, you know, and the other characters played by Kaylin and, you know, Paulson, another movie wasting Sarah Paulson and Rihanna and Awkwafina, like, none of them are that particularly interesting. The most interesting character in the movie actually turns out to be Anne Hathaway's character, is a character that actually, I think she gives a pretty funny performance in the film. There's a bit of an arc to her character, and, you know, the sort of the so-called villain of the piece, played by Richard Armitage, is a zero, like a nothing, like, you know, compared to who Andy Garcia was in the previous films, and even Al Pacino in the third film, like, is a nothing character. The twists and turns are particularly obvious. In fact, if you're paying attention to, one, the title, and two, the TV spots and the trailers, you kind of know what one of the big twists are going to be towards the end of the film. So that didn't work for me either. And I felt that this was very much on rote. This was very much on autopilot, and I walked away very disappointed in it.
Mm. Okay. All right. Why don't we take a break here, you guys. Hang on a second, okay? Eric and Colin. Eric was just talking about Ocean's 8. He was disappointed. We'll find out what Colin thought of it and what I thought of it as well when we take a break here for the news on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue, and we're here until 5 a.m. It is Monday morning, and my dad's going to call in and tell a joke. And we are going to talk about ice cream and all kinds of other things. Its phone number is 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're here till 5. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man, Steve Cochran, has your morning drive at 6. All right. We will be talking about the box office. Eric Childress and Colin Suter join me every week to talk about new movies. And before the break, Eric told us about Ocean's 8, and he gave us his review of it. He was disappointed in it. Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, let's find out what Colin thought of Ocean's 8.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same. I'm in the same boat with Eric here on this one. This is a kind of a disappointment, and reason why it's because it's a waste of a good cast. You know, this is a really talented group of people here, and they're not given that much to do. I mean, you got somebody like Mindy Kaling, who's, you know, very funny, and she's not funny here, not really. But they all look the part of it. It's, you know, they all look like they're on board with this, so it's not from a lack of trying from them, but there's just something about the energy here that just I'm just not feeling it. And it's a kind of, like Eric said, it's a very rote heist script, and it kind of reminds you that it's, you know, if you've seen one heist movie, you've seen them all, and that's kind of how I felt when watching this movie, like I've seen this many times before already. And I'm not talking about American Animals, I'm just talking about just regular heist movies that have done this sort of thing before and a little better, and, you know, with a little more energy. I mean, just last year, I mean, Soderbergh had a heist movie called Logan Lucky. I'll take that one over this just because it was funnier, it was more absurd, it had more imagination, and it just had characters that were worth investing in. But this was just kind of your standard by-the-numbers heist movie, and I think this cast deserves a lot better. And, you know, just kind of walked away from it, and I think I forgot about it as soon as it was over. And, you know, that's not what I want from a movie like this with this kind of cast. I want, you know, something that just worth everybody's time, including the talent. But that's just not what this is, so...
Wow, I liked it more than you guys did. I thought it was a lot of fun, and I thought the cast had a good time. You know, I thought the stuff between Sandra Bullock and Cate Blanchett was really, really great. It reminded me a lot of the stuff between Clooney and Pitt in the movies, in the Ocean's movies. And I thought the rest of the supporting cast seemed to be having fun. And I agree with you, Eric. Anne Hathaway gives the best performance in the movie. She's really funny in it and really quite good. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a standard, heist movie, but I thought it was pulled off with a lot of fun. There was a lot of good energy in it, and I thought the whole heist itself and how it was filmed and shot and how it was executed was, I thought, done nicely, and I thought there was a nice sense of humor to it. I laughed quite a lot. You're right, Eric. I mean, if you just look at the title of the movie, there is one twist that...
it's done with the same manner of Alfred let Vicki Vale into the Batcave in Batman.
Yeah.
Like, wait, what?
But I found this movie entertaining. The audience I saw it with, we had a good time. My parents, we all thought it was, I thought it was fun. It's not great. As heist movies go, I've seen better heist movies, and I agree. I think Logan Lucky is a better movie than this, but I was entertained by it. There's a lot of star power. And I think everybody in the movie is having a good time. And I thought it was very entertaining, and I thought it was pretty good. So I'm a fan of it. I thought Ocean's 8 was pretty good and very entertaining. So I'm recommending it. I had fun. So, all right. Well, Colin.
Yeah.
That brings us to another movie. Why don't you tell us about Hereditary?
Okay. Well, this is a horror film, and it stars Toni Collette as a mom whose own mother just passed away. She's married to Gabriel Byrne. They have two kids, a teenager named Peter and a little girl named Charlie. So Toni Collette's mother just died, and while that might be sad on one level, she won't be terribly missed by this family. Not entirely. She had a lot of problems with people and vice versa. And Colette is trying to figure out, what traits she might be inheriting from her mom and passing down to her own kids. But there are a lot of weird, creepy, unresolved little mysteries surrounding her mom's life and death. And these things pop up in the house where they all live. And, you know, little Charlie is not exactly your average little girl. She has some issues about death that she's working through, albeit not in the healthiest way. And really, they're all dealing with grief in their own way. But this is only the first third of the film that I'm talking about. And I mean, that's probably all I should say, because the less you know going into this horror film, the better. This is a undeniably creepy, scary little film here. And it's not your, you know, not your typical jump scares, your typical, you know, PG-13, you know, looking in the mirror and there's a demon and then it's gone kind of thing. There are, you know, all the elements are at play here in a way that is done by a horror, you know, pro. But this is from a first-time director. Ari Aster is the director of this film, the writer of this film. And he, there is such an assured, confident hand at the helm here that the likes of which we haven't seen in a long time for a debut. You know, the movie does a great job of just slowly building the tension and the dread and really kind of taking us down a path that, you know, does remind us of, you know, seeing The Exorcist for the first time. You know, this very this family that seems like it could be, you know, once they get over this, you know, this grief, could be really rock solid family unit. But you just kind of peeling away at everything as the film goes on, and you just get the sense that, man, what is really happening here? You're never really quite sure. And I'm being vague on purpose because I don't want to spoil anything. But suffice to say, this movie creeped me out. I did have dreams that night about after I saw it at the screening that I blame on this film, but in a good way. In a good way. That's what we want from horror movies. We want them to stay with us. We want them to haunt us a little bit and stay, you know, and scare us and disturb us. And this movie did that for me. So. And I recommend it highly, and I recommend not spoiling any of it for yourself before you see it. I saw the trailer, I think, maybe once or twice, but long before I saw the actual film, and I'm glad, you know, a lot of it was kind of out of my memory. And the cast is fantastic. I mean, yes, we will heap praise on Toni Collette through the end of the year, definitely. And it's very well deserved. But I, you know, also the kids here, Alex Wolff as the teenage boy is really great. And where they found this Millie Shapiro to play little Charlie, she is tremendous. And there's a little bit of a makeup job on her that is really remarkable. And I didn't really think of it as such until I saw her IMDb page. I was like, wow, okay, that was a really nice, subtle makeup job they did on her. It's really terrific. But there's so much more to the movie than that. But this is obviously highly recommended, and really that shows that this decade is going to be remembered as a true renaissance period for science fiction and horror, because we're getting some really smart stuff coming down the pike these last few years, and this is definitely a testament to that.
Okay. All right, guys, hang on a second. Eric, hang on, and Colin, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, and when we come back, we'll find out what Eric thought of Heredity, Heredity, and Hereditary, and then you'll find out what I thought of it. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase studio here. Okay, before the break, Colin told us all about Hereditary and what he thought of it. Eric, welcome back.
Hello.
And Colin, welcome back.
Hello.
All right, Eric.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So a listener of yours on Facebook this weekend talked about how she's been waiting to see this movie ever since I talked about it at Sundance on your show back in January.
Yeah.
At Sundance over the years, I've been doing less and less actual midnight screenings just because it's cold and it's late and I'm seeing movies all day. But Steve Procopi and I went to the midnight premiere of Hereditary. And the prospect of seeing a two hour in length horror movie in a time when a lot of midnight films at Sundance have been increasingly disappointing, I was just like, oh, okay, we'll power through this. And by the end of it, we were shaken to our core, and we were kind of convinced that we had seen possibly a new horror classic. And then we just waited for people to reciprocate and to see what other people thought of it. And I haven't seen a reaction like this to a horror movie on the festival circuit. The closest I could probably think is maybe The Babadook, which is a film that this movie shares the number of traits with, but I think actually improves upon, particularly in the actual unsettlingness of what you come away with by the end of this movie. I mean, this is a movie that deals in deep psychological fears. It has some of those familiar horror tropes that we've seen over the years, but uses them in ways that diverting your expectations in every possible way. There are twists and turns that Colin clearly hasn't mentioned in this thing that are shocking and leading up to a climax that is bonkers and exactly the kind of fast-paced, scare-a-minute stuff that you're hoping that this movie is leading up towards, right up to its completely insane ending that fits with things that we've been hinted at throughout the entire film. Not enough, we could say as much as we want about Toni Collette, and there probably still isn't enough that's going to be said about her. I mean, horror performances don't tend to get the same sort of respect that dramatic performances do, but this is a dramatic horror performance of the highest caliber. Maybe the best performance of Toni Collette's career, which is saying something in and of itself, but to say that this is one of the great horror performances of all time, I don't think it's hyperbole either. I've still only seen this movie once since Sundance because, I don't know if I want to go alone to another screening of this, and two, I really want to bring people to experience just to see if they love it or hate it, or what, and I think that this is a film that clearly can go either way with some people, but the response to this movie is absolutely incredible, at least on the critical side, and I really hope that people will really give this movie the chance that it deserves, because we don't see debuts like this in any genre, like this. And Ari Aster is a filmmaker that I hope that we're going to be talking about for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I kind of like this.
Yeah,
yeah. I've seen it twice. I did go by myself on Friday to see it. I was sitting next to Colin at the screening of it last week, and this movie is amazing. It is it truly lives up to the hype, and I know that it's been hyped a lot, and everybody's been calling it one of the scariest movies ever made, and it is. It just quite simply is. It is a movie that burrows under your skin and stays there. And Colin, you said that you were having dreams about it. I couldn't get this movie out of my head for days. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just couldn't shake it. I could not shake it. And it is significantly it's really about a lot of stuff. There's a lot of deep psychological stuff going on here in this movie. The running time goes along, you're kind of like, what's happening? Cuz you're really not sure what's going on, which is a good thing. And then when the last 15 minutes of the movie happens, it's so crazy. It's so completely crazy, but like logical at the same time. And I don't know how that was. I have no idea how that was pulled off, but it completely worked for me. I mean, it's just a terrifying movie. It is a terrifying movie. There is also one of the most effective seance scenes I've ever seen in my life in movies. Since the Changeling, the George C. Scott movie, which I thought had the best seance scene ever until I saw this movie. And it's like The Babadook, it's about dealing with grief, it's about dealing with family issues. And it is a magnificent movie. It is terrifying. Performances across the board are great. I mean, listen, Toni Collette is astonishing in this movie. It is a truly incredible performance, like a really incredible performance. And I hope she gets a nomination. And I hope A24 goes out of their way to spend some money on a campaign for her to get nominated, because I think it's the best performance of the year. I think it's her best performance, and she's a great actress. And I think one of the reasons why this movie works so well is because of her and all the other actors. Alex Wolff, where did this kid come from? I mean,
Jumanji.
Man, he's unbelievable. He's unbelievable in this movie. There is a moment in the movie where something horrifying and shocking happens, and the camera's just on his face, okay? And it's that long, single take where it's just him processing something. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's riveting and scary and breathtaking. And it's just this kid's face. He's phenomenal in this movie. We haven't mentioned Gabriel Byrne. Gabriel Byrne is great in this movie. It's kind of a thankless role, but he's great in it. And you know, the audience that I saw it with both times were everybody was suitably freaked. Everybody was suitably freaked out, like they should be. I truly think this is a horror classic. I really do. It's my favorite movie of the year so far, and it was everything that I had hoped it would be and more. And it's really, really, really scary. And there's already a backlash of people saying, "Oh, it's overrated." Blah blah blah. It wasn't that scary. It is that scary. It is that good. It is that. I mean, it really, really gets under your skin and stays there. This is the real deal. And again, as you guys both mentioned, this is a directorial debut of immense promise. I mean, this is as assured. I mean, this is kind of like Blood Simple level. You know what I mean? Like
that's high praise.
That kind of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's what I'm saying. I mean, this is like that kind of debut. It's like Blood Simple good. When you're talking about first films, he's really, this guy has really just made a statement, and man, it's good. It's just really scary, and the second time it was even scarier and creepier. this is the real deal. Hereditary. It's the best. It's the best. It's just phenomenal. And again, I really, really, really hope Toni Collette gets the. Gets an Oscar nomination for this, because it's a fearless and incredible performance. I was exhausted watching her. You know what I mean? Like it was just watching her, what she goes through in this movie and the intensity with which she acts. It's exhausting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I said, God.
And I got to tell you, the continued praise of Alex Wolff. There's a sequence in this film where he's responsible, or sort of pseudo responsible, for something that happened in a car.
Yeah.
And his reaction, or the character's reaction to what he does after that, I think we've all been in that position before. Not the what actually happens, but hopefully not anyway.
Yeah.
but like the absolute denial of it, and hope you kind of can get away with it.
Little
bit. That sequence freaked me out.
It's incredible. It's incredible. Yeah. What about the dinner scene? But I mean, where Gabriel Byrne is just trying to control what's happening, and then between Alex Wolff and Toni Collette, unbelievable. I mean, just so good. And there's a scene where she goes into his bedroom. I don't want to give anything away, but I'm telling you, man, this is the real deal. This is the real deal. So anyway, Hereditary, it's the best movie ever. So all right, when we come back, we will talk about this week in box office right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio here on Michigan Avenue. We're here till 5 a.m. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke, because it's Monday and it's a jokey time. We just finished with the Monday morning movie reviews, and I do want to mention a couple of quick screenings here before we let Colin go. You guys, the Chicago Critics Film Festival is screening Mad Max Fury Road Tuesday night at Millennium Park, and unfortunately, it's the same night I'm screening Back to the Future.
Isn't it amazing, Nick, that we're both doing screenings of like the other's almost favorite movie?
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
And we can't go
and
to
we
it.
We can't go to we can't. I can't go to yours. You can't go to mine. Mine, right. Back to the Future, by the way, is almost sold out. So if you guys are going to get tickets, listeners, get them now. AMCtheaters.com, because we're going to sell out. There's no question about it. Mad Max Fury Road is free. It's in Millennium Park. That's Tuesday night. Wednesday night, you are hosting a screening of one of my favorite movies of all time, Eric.
Yeah, Close Encounters of the Third Kind at the Elk Grove Cinema. Only $5, and I'll be doing a Q&A afterwards. It'll be the new 4K restoration screening.
That's my favorite Spielberg movie, I think. Yes. So, all right, next week we got Hearts Beat Loud with the great Nick Offerman.
That's right.
The Incredibles 2.
Mm-hmm.
We got Tag.
Yeah.
And the remake of Superfly.
That's right.
So that's all coming up. Colin, thanks, buddy.
All right,
we'll talk to you soon. There's Colin. He'll be back next week. Eric. Okay, let's talk about this here. Number one, Ocean's 8 with $41.5 million. That's pretty solid, huh?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I think it's a little bit more than what some people were estimating, but at the same time, not a huge surprise. I think, you know, anywhere in the sort of the mid to high 30s to low 40s is exactly what people were expecting about this. I'm curious to see what the public's reaction to it is and see exactly how far it drops off next week. But it's a solid start.
Yeah, absolutely. And my guess is Incredibles 2 will just knock it out of the park next
week. Oh, yeah, without question. It's going to knock it down. I don't think Tag is going to overtake it, but it'll probably be a solid number two next week.
Okay. All right, number two, Solo, A Star Wars Story, $15 million. It's only up to $176 million in 2 weeks. That's hugely disappointing.
Yeah, it's just a little over $300 million worldwide. So this movie's probably not even going to reach half a billion, which is really surprising for a Star Wars movie. Yeah, I mean, this is a true disappointment on many levels. Although people should just leave it at that, let it go, stop asking for Kathleen Kennedy to be fired or be stepped down because of it. This talk that's ramping up about that, I think, is so ridiculous. It makes me sick.
Yeah.
So they misfired. They had a lot of controversy on it, and people took some of that controversy to heart and just didn't go.
Yeah.
So
that's too bad. I liked it a lot, in fact.
Yeah, we all did. Most people do like it who went to see it.
It's a very entertaining movie.
Yes.
Number three, Deadpool 2, $13.6 million. Its total in America is $278 million.
Yeah, and over $650 million worldwide. So it's approaching what the original did worldwide. It's about $125 million away from that. So this is a solid hit. I'm sure we'll see a Deadpool 3 at some point.
Yeah, no question about it. Number four, I was disappointed in this. Hereditary, $13 million. It should have made more.
Yeah, I mean, you have to consider, you know, I've wrestled with this all weekend, and that it's a film that, you know, horror films have been doing very well, but mostly of the PG-13 variety.
Yeah.
They're the ones that tend to break out with the huge numbers. This is an R-rated film. It's an intense film. A24, it's the widest release they've ever had. It's the widest launch they've ever had, and so they got the biggest opening they've ever had with $13 million.
Right.
I was hoping it was going to bust Lady Bird's, you know, total. I don't think it's going to do that now, unfortunately, but, you know, the movie only cost $10 million to make. So this is eventually going to find its way into profit.
Sure.
It's just disappointing because we love it so much.
Right.
we wanted to see that they do Ocean's 8 numbers, and it just, you know, it didn't. And it will find its audience eventually. But this A24 has got to be happy with that number.
Well, sure. And the per screen average isn't bad, though. You know what I mean? Like,
no, it's not.
Yeah, it's $4,300 per screen, which is pretty.
Yeah.
which is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Number five, Avengers Infinity War. Where are we at on this one now?
Well, we're at $654 million just in the U.S., in America. So it's not quite up to Black Panther numbers there, but it's less than $2 million away from reaching the $2 billion mark worldwide.
Man, oh man.
$2 billion.
That is crazy. That really is crazy. All right, number six, Adrift with $5 million, $21 million in 2 weeks. Not good.
Not good. No, I think people, the audience who went to go see this last week are not crazy about the way that this thing turns out, and they clearly are not telling their friends about it.
Right. Okay. And then a solid hit at number seven, Book Club. They found an audience for this movie.
Yeah, quite the contrary. This is a movie that has been kind of a word of mouth hit. You know, started off with an average number, and is just continuing to grow its audience. So $56 million. This thing's going to, you know, eventually hit 60. That's a solid hit.
Yeah. I was disappointed here, man. I was hoping more people would go and see it, considering how much I loved it. But Hotel Artemis only brought in $3 million.
Yeah, and unfortunately, you can see this coming in some respect. I was hoping that this was going to be, I mean, Global Road, again, used to be Open Road.
Right.
They haven't opened a film to $10 million since Nightcrawler in 2014.
Yeah.
Which we've talked about before. And this seemed to be the one, like, their last sort of ditch effort to go all in a movie.
Yeah.
And they advertised it as best they possibly could. I mean, it's not the easiest movie to market, I suppose. They went with the cast listing, basically. And it just, you know, maybe summer's not the right place to open it, you know, particularly against Ocean's 8 and Hereditary, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I think this film will find a cult audience eventually. but it's not going to do anything to help Global Road's bottom line.
Yeah, that's too bad. I've really liked it, though. Number nine, Upgrade, $2.2 million. It's up to $9 million in 2 weeks.
Yeah, which is not bad. I mean, it's only cost like $3 million.
Yeah.
You know, it's a Blumhouse production, and so it's that Neon's division of Blumhouse Tilt, it's called.
Right.
So that's a pretty decent, you know, this is a studio also released Colossal, speaking of great Anne Hathaway movies.
Yes.
They should be happy with those numbers, I think.
And then at number 10, Life of the Party with Melissa McCarthy. $2.1 million, $50 million total, that it's been out for, what, like 4 weeks or 5 weeks?
5 weeks, yeah. So not great numbers, not exactly a disaster, but nothing that anyone's going to hang their hat on.
Yeah, okay. So Ocean's 8 was the big winner this week, but next week it's going to be all about The Incredibles 2. Are you guessing at what area we're talking about here, how much it's going to make?
Well, I think it's going to be probably in the 120 range, $120 million, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. What did the first one do?
The first one, it didn't hit $300 million in the U.S. I think it was like $290, $295, something like that, I want to say. And it opened to like high 70s, I think, or maybe low 70s.
Mm-hmm.
But right in that range. That was a November release.
Right.
Last time, too.
Right.
So now it's got the summer behind it, and obviously, you know, a lot of build-up to it. So I think it'll be a solid $100-plus million opening next week.
Yeah, I can't believe it's been 14 years since that movie was released.
Yeah,
isn't that crazy?
It's crazy.
Man, oh man. So I'm really looking forward to it, too, because I love the first one. And I
hear good things.
Yeah.
I've been hearing good things. People who have seen it, they seem to be very happy with it.
Is anybody, I mean, I have a feeling that there's the movie coming out next week that's going to surprise everybody with the amount of money it makes is Superfly.
No, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, you remember just last year when All Eyes on Me, the Tupac movie, did exceptionally well. I mean, I haven't really seen a lot of advertisements for Superfly, but it's probably is clearly being very specifically targeted. It's opening on Wednesday this week, so we'll see exactly how far it jumps ahead on Wednesday. But yeah, no, I think there's a very strong possibility that you could see them put up a number in high teens, maybe their low 20s for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that. I have a feeling there's going to be a big audience for it. And then finally, Tag, what are we going to get? Horrible Bosses 2 numbers?
Yeah, I'm thinking teens. I'm thinking like around like 15, 16 million maybe. I don't know. I mean, I want to like the premise of the movie. But every time I watch the preview and like they cut to slow motion like six times in the trailer,
yeah.
I was just like, "Oh, come on, guys! Like, really?"
Yeah.
So I'm not, you know, hanging my hat.
Well,
I mean,
I'm looking forward to it simply because of the cast. I mean,
sure.
You know, like, I mean, I like everybody in the movie. And some of the people I like a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm actually looking forward to it. I hope it's, you know, I mean, I agree with you that the, you know, all the slow motion stuff and the all that stuff is a little bit much, but I think the cast may be able to carry it. That's what I, you know, because
I hope so.
Such a
great, I mean, I'm rooting for every movie.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, well, there you go. Thanks, man. We will talk. We'll talk next week, and have a great time at Mad Max, and have a great time at Close Encounters,
and enjoy your Back to the Future screening.
I shall. All right, Eric. Thanks, buddy.
You got it.
There you go. Eric Childress, everybody. He'll be back again next week along with Colin Suter for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. All right, we're going to take a break. We got weather and we got traffic coming up right now. I got the weather for you here.